The season is here, and that means regularly scheduled podcasts, more or less. Welcome in to Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann, Phil Bush. Phil, the season is here, and that's the good news.
It's news. It's good news. The result, not as nice, but...
That's what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk everyone through it, get you through maybe an overall frustrating weekend, depending on what teams you cheer for in the state of Wisconsin.
Oh my.
But we'll get to those things in just a bit. But we're going to talk about the seasoning opening game against Belmont and look ahead to the week for Marquette basketball. Overall, Phil, I think, you know, we love to talk about the trolls and those who stand on a ledge, but at least the people who I follow and stay and talk with about Marquette basketball, I think the reactions from them were mostly sensible, but still, I think some general upset feelings regarding the seasoning opening loss to Belmont.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to is there's just some general angst amongst the faithful, given the, you know, whether we like it or not, the relative importance of the game given the rest of the non-conference schedule, and the fact that we were in contention, and you could make a significant argument that we really should have won that game, that we cost ourselves that game. There's a fair amount of angst, but I think the folks that are really tuned in, I think, kind of look at it as, hey, you know, we had five freshmen playing considerable double-digit minutes, and we had a real shot to win that game against a very veteran team. It could have been a whole lot worse.
Yeah, I kind of want to go at this Belmont game and what some may look at as a compliment sandwich. We're going to start with something positive, then go with some negative stuff, and then maybe end on something optimistic. But let's be honest. Belmont is not a terrible loss. It's not a great result by any stretch of the imagination. But Belmont, Phil, is a team that, to me, looks like, first of all, they're obviously a very experienced team. They've been in the NCAA tournament pretty regularly. I looked at their schedule before we started the show, and, you know, I'm not sure how many games Belmont is going to actually lose this year. I don't think it's very many. To me, Belmont looks like a team that could be in the neighborhood of 25 wins as a mid-major by the end of the year, just because I think they'll be very good in their conference, and that's certainly what you're hoping for if you're Marquette. So, I mean, it's not like Marquette went out and lost to, Western Illinois or Alabama State in the seasoning opening weekend.
Certainly not. I don't know who would lose to such teams.
Yeah, there were a lot of bad losses to go around besides
Radford.
Those two. I mean, you know, Radford beat Georgetown. It was a rough weekend for the Legends Classic as Arizona State lost at home to Sacramento State. And then NC State lost to Bill and Mary at home. So there were some pretty stinkers for some team that are going to be at the Barclays coming up next week. So Marquette wasn't the only one that, you know, had a less than inspiring effort in their first home game. But there were several teams out there that had it much worse. I think in the grand scheme of things, when the season's over, you're not going to look at this loss to Belmont and say that was a catastrophe, like, say, you know, Omaha last year.
Right. I think this is far from a catastrophe.
No.
I mean, one of the things we have to keep in mind, you know, with Belmont, just looking at it, if you look at out of all 351 D1 teams last year, and Belmont only lost one starter who was their worst shooter, they were top 50 in three-point percent, top 40 in offensive efficiency, top 30 in points per game, top 25 in shooting, top 5 in 3 points made, top 5 in three-point rate, and top 5 in effective field goal percentage. They're a good offensive team. So we weren't playing the Sisters of the Poor and Legless or Western Illinois. We were playing a good offensive team with a lot of youth, and we really had a lot of – and we came back from two double-digit leads. I mean, the team has a lot of positive takeaways from the game.
For what it's worth, the good folks over there at KenPom project Belmont to go 21-8. This season.
Yeah, and that's one of the new adders this year is we're going to be slightly less prepared or slightly more prepared in having KenPom at our fingertips now.
We always want to make the podcast better. We want to make it more interesting and try to bring some statistics into the mix for you. So for what it's worth, I know that's just a projection. There's not much data to go on for this season, but right now, projecting to Belmont to win a lot of games. So again, it's not losing a bye game, despite what John Rothstein thinks.
Boy,
I generally like John. I follow him on Twitter because he loves college basketball. But boy, he was fighting saying it was a bye game just because it's of they get money from the tournament. It was not a bye game in the true definition of a bye game, as in Marquette paying a team to come in and get slaughtered, which is what several other games on Marquette's schedule may be. But that is not what Belmont was. This was a Legends Classic game. I think if Wojo had his way, he would have rather have played IUPUI first and then Belmont. But, that's the way it is. They lost it. That's disappointing. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying this is a great result, like Marquette went out and lost to Kentucky or Duke here. And like, as we said, there is some negative to losing. There's some negatives to losing this game. If you're upset about it, I understand. I don't expect you to have a Fargo reaction and be like, well, okay then, and just say, and just be okay with it. There's reasons to be upset, as you said, Phil. They had a chance to win. That's the first thing that's upsetting to me, is the way the game went. They had a 1-point lead, 40 seconds to go, and then basically five bad things happened in a row. Dwayne Wilson took a three early in the shot clock,
which was very similar to like Jarrell McNeil against Louisville. And
that's the thing. Like, he was so wide open, there was nobody within 15 feet of him, and you saw it in his eyes. He had that look like, should I take this? I'm going to take this. And you're like, that was one of those no, and it yes if it goes in, but it was a no, oh no, because it didn't go in. So that was one bad thing. Then there was a foul on the other end. Belmont took the lead. Then we got a charge. If maybe you dislike the call, too bad. I mean, it is what it is. Henry didn't get the call.
I thought it was the right call. I think Henry charged. Yeah.
And then Tracy Carter was out of control after that, and that was a frustrating end to it. So basically nothing went right in the last 40 seconds for Marquette, and they lost. So that was the thing that's most frustrating for me, is that they had it right on their fingertips, and they just couldn't get one more good play to finish.
Right. Well, and this, while we're in the midst of the meat or the bad of the sandwich, I do want to address this is that last 40 seconds kind of in a microcosm was the concerns I had about Wojo going into this season. He's got 15 years of recruiting experience. He's got 15 years of pregame, preparation at Duke, but he doesn't have those reps of being the guy making the decision at the end of games or in-game adjustments. He's only in the first game of his second year. And I think those last 40 seconds kind of were indicative of a growth curve that Wojo still needs to be on.
And that's something you said in the last podcast, and I said in the last podcast, my concern was how long will freshman mistakes cost Marquette games?
Correct.
And youth cost Marquette that game.
You're right, and coaching, because, I mean, quite honestly, right. Henry Ellenson, I know people think it was a bad call, but he charged. And the reason that he got that charge call was because the Belmont defender knew what was going to happen. And mm-hmm. and Ellenson, he didn't yet have the savvy or the experience, to see the lane was cut off and to pull up and take a jumper at that spot. I think it was a poorly drawn up play in my opinion, but again, I'm not paid multimillion dollars. and the other part is like Tracy Carter. I like Tracy Carter. This is not a knock on him, but I just in the flow of that game and based on the minute distribution, I didn't understand why Tracy Carter was in at the end of the game. I would have much rather Hanif Cheatham in at the end of the game.
Cheatham looked pretty good.
Yeah, he looked good. He was very steady. You trusted him with the ball. Carter's flashier. I get that, but he seems to play a little bit more out of control than Cheatham does. So those were the issues I had where coaching may have cost us that game. And what I hope is that this is not something that occurs over and over again, because essentially we've got a sophomore coach and a bunch of freshman players. We can only hope that we grow up fast so that those don't keep reoccurring.
Yeah, I mean, easy to sit here and say this after the fact, but to be honest, I would have said it beforehand anyway. There are probably four or five other guys I would rather be bringing that ball up than Carter in that situation. Dwayne Wilson probably at the top of the list. Maybe Cohen, even Juwan Johnson, I might have felt better in that situation, at least in the ball with his hands that late in the game in a critical spot. So, yeah, that last play was just like, just totally took the air out of the building. Like, oh, that's how it ends.
Yeah.
Well, that was a bummer. And, you know, the other, you know, besides the fact how they lost, another frustrating to me, and this is something we've really harped on. I feel like we're beating this drum to death, Phil, but it bears repeating because it is part of the season, is Marquette's non-conference schedule is so weak. It is so, like, I saw one writer rated it the worst in the Big East, which is probably accurate, that the opportunities for good wins in the non-conference schedule are so few and far between. And that was a chance for a nice win. And when you lose that, when you're kind of behind the eight ball as far as putting together any kind of respectable resume for the tournament. I know a lot of national analysts look at Marquette and say they should be happy making the NIT this year, and maybe that's accurate. I don't look at it that way. I say I want to see this team make the tournament. Until that is definitely not going to happen, I still look at this season as how is this team going to get into the tournament. And a win over Belmont would have helped that cause. And to now you really put yourself in a position where you've got to, you know, games against teams like LSU and Wisconsin and Iowa become a little more important because you have to make up for that missed opportunity to get a nice win.
Yeah, I agree. It puts, and I think that's ultimately why people were so angsty on social media was just mm-hmm. because of that added pressure of, well, if we don't have that win, where are we going to get the signature wins we need to make the tournament? But I do think, again, and maybe I'm just drinking some sort of magical Kool-Aid, but while the loss was tough and there were definitely things to work on, I actually, in the, you know, if you remove the whole, this is a critical, almost must-win game as the first game of the season, if you remove that element, there were a lot of really good things and things I wasn't expecting to see out of Marquette. With as much youth as they had, they came back from two double-digit leads. They took leads, they took punches, and were able to roll with them. I think they, again, from a youthful perspective, they fell far too in love with the three-point shooting. Let's be honest, they're not a good three-point shooting team. Like, it just shouldn't be done.
Right.
Especially Henry and Juwan Johnson. But there was a lot of positive. I mean, Henry looked better than I would have anticipated him to look. Hanif was good. Tracy was good. Sandy Cohen looked really good. So I think while that game was really important to try and win, I feel more confident going into the rest of the non-conference that this team may be able to win a game like LSU or at Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's kind of one of the positives I want to take away. That's why I was so conflicted watching the game overall, is I, for the most part, I liked what I saw from the team. Not everything, of course, but compared to what we sat through last year, the team is much more thrilling to watch.
Oh, night and day.
And you have a superstar to go to late in the game now. And when you get down double digits, there's always hope now because, like, all right, Henry Ellenson needs to take over the game. Henry Ellenson needs to make some plays. And he did make plays. And he was a big factor as to why, you know, they were able to erase an 11-point deficit. When you go for 21 and 16, that's a great effort. And he was 7 of 16 from the floor. That's solid. Would have liked to see maybe fewer three-pointers shot or more three-pointers made, one or the other. And then, of course, maybe a little bit better from the free-throw line would have been nice, too. But overall, love what I saw from Henry Ellenson, as advertised. Real excited to see what he can do over the course of the season. And so to have, when you have a guy who is looked at as an NBA prospect on the roster, the team's going to be more enjoyable. And as you said, there were so many other players who, you know, look like they have improved. You know, we're just one game in here, so who knows? I mean, anybody could regress over the course of the next 30 games. But, small sample size, one game. I really enjoyed watching that Marquette team play, despite the fact that they lost.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I said it at the time, watching that game, even as it was frustrating losing that game, was infinitely more entertaining and infinitely more interesting to watch than anything from last year's team. And Henry Ellenson had the most minutes. He played 36 minutes last in that game. The next closest was Luke Fisher at 30. It's going to be interesting to see if he's a top five NBA talent. You kind of have to, but it'll be interesting to see if he, you know, is the man that much and putting that many minutes on. Say against a Wisconsin or an LSU, is Ellenson going to be playing 35, 36 minutes?
Yeah, and who knows? I think as there's so many bye games coming up, we'll probably see those minutes a little more evenly distributed in those games. You know, by the way, I was a little surprised we saw 0 minutes from Wally
Ellison.
That
was surprising.
You know, and the thing is, I really don't know what to expect from Wally to begin with, but I guess I did expect to see him on the floor. But I guess, you know, as you mentioned, Cohen and Cheatham were playing so well, maybe there just wasn't a spot in the rotation for him.
Well, and Sakar came in. I would have expected Wally ahead of Sakar, but Sakar came in, and while he didn't show up on the stat sheet, really, he was the catalyst a couple of times for...
He did have a nice tip-in.
Yes.
I mean, that was his one bucket of the game. I mean, that was a nice play.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, who knows what he's going to bring over the course of the season. I don't know how many minutes Onum's going to get. But I did expect to at least see Wally on the floor a few times. And the fact that he didn't play at all was just a little surprising. Not to say that's necessarily hugely negative towards Wally. I'm just a little surprised we didn't see him at all.
Yeah. Well, and it'll be interesting because I don't think that's the Dwayne Wilson we're going to see all season either. I mean, he wasn't bad, but he actually had fewer minutes than Juwan Johnson, but he shot 1 of 8 from 3. Like, I know that the basketball, especially with these new rules, is going to spacing and pacing, like in the NBA, where you're spreading everything out, you're taking shots, you're trying to go quicker. But Dwayne just, I don't know what happened to his 3-point shot, but he didn't seem to have it. Maybe it was an off night. So, got to get him going. Like, we've got to have a third piece. That's going to be the difference.
The thing is, we just needed a few more points from the backcourt, and we'd have been thrilled. You know, we're just talking, you just lost by 3 points. So if we could have gotten a couple more points from somewhere, we probably would have been thrilled overall with the performance. But off shooting night for Dwayne overall, 1 of 8 from 3 looks pretty bad when you look at the box score.
Yeah, and Juwan Johnson, let's also talk. I thought other than his 3-point shooting, which he just should not do, I thought he played really well. He seemed to, and I even made the comment on Twitter, is that he the difference between last year and this year, again, small sample size, 2 games, but last year he was playing quick. This year he seems to be playing quick and in control. Which is, you know, it's a subtle difference, but he seems to be able to, you know, he had a couple of drives to the hoop where he just, you know, kind of took a Euro step, held the ball up high, and that was not something you saw out of him last year. He tended to be a little more bull in a china shop kind of player.
Yeah, and you would hope players would get maturity as they get older. So hopefully we're starting to see that from Juwan, who, of course, you know, was a 5-star prospect coming in, and who knows... you know, how he will continue to develop. But even if, like, his ceiling is, like, contributions like, say, Juan Anderson got, where at the end of the day, while Juan wasn't a star per se, he was such a key player because he was one of the more mature kids on the team, you know. And he was a guy other guys look up to and could at least give you some modest contributions here and there. So maybe if we can get kind of that from Juwan as he continues to mature and just make better decisions out there, I think he'll be a solid player. He doesn't have to be the star on this team is the key thing. So I agree with you. It doesn't look like he was trying too hard, like trying to overdo it. I think he was playing pretty much within his role on the team in the game against Belmont.
Yep, absolutely. And I think there are plenty of positives. It feels like the positives were kind of more subtle under the surface, whereas all the negatives were in your face. Obviously, we lost. I think there were plenty of positives that'll really build, you know, towards the rest of the non-conference and certainly into the conference season. You know, because we talked about whether we make the tournament or not is going to be based entirely on how we do in the conference season, and this team should be playing much better. As an example, if we played Belmont on New Year's Eve as opposed to the first game of the season, you know, I think the result's different. But you know, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, because Belmont, that so much experience on the team, they've been playing together for a while, whereas that was Marquette's first real NCAA game playing together, and I think at times it maybe showed a little bit, especially defensively. I mean, there were a lot of lapses defensively that led to a lot of wide open threes for Belmont. Now, Belmont did chuck up a lot of them, and some of them just miraculously fell.
Like Bradshaw's bank shot in the first half?
Yeah, I was like, I mean, that was Creighton-esque.
Yeah.
Some of those shots that were falling, that was frustrating. But, you know, I think there were a few lapses that I think can be fixed with as this team continues to kind of gel and, you know, buy into Wojo's system, especially the new guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so we looked at the Belmont game. I think we've talked about it enough. they lost. It sucks. It doesn't suck horribly like losing to Western Illinois or Alabama State, but it is disappointing. But on to the next one, Phil. As we are recording this on Sunday, so as we look ahead to Monday's game against IUPUI, hopefully, knock on wood, a win for Marquette as they get back on the horse. IUPUI, of course, comes out of the Summit League. They did win their first game against Indiana State, which I guess is a nice win for IUPUI.
Well, it's, any time our opponents can beat other teams that aren't us, that's a good thing.
Yeah, sure. So, for what it's worth, the KenPom projection on this game is a 94% chance for Marquette to win. So, that's pretty darn high.
Yeah.
But it's project
not the highest Marquette that KenPom's projecting. So, that'll give you an idea of what our non-conference schedule is.
Yeah. That you look through Marquette's non-con, there are a lot of 95s and 98s and 99s that were Marquette. Ken Palm has Marquette as a 16-point favorite in this game against IUPUI. So not an outstanding team, at least according to the numbers, Phil. And so you would hope that Marquette's going to, you know, right the ship. Like, as I said, the Belmont loss is just not in any way an indication of disaster for this team. It's just a bit of a frustrating loss. I expect them to play a really good game on Monday, and you know, even the record at 1-1.
Yeah, I think I say this as a Packer fan who just sat through the worst Packer game in the last 10 years. But IUPUI should just be a cakewalk for the team in terms of getting tuned up, getting players good minutes, not overtaxing, working on some things. We're going to have height on them. We're going to have athleticism on them. It should be a good tune-up, kind of get everybody back to, hey, we're confident so that we're ready for the Iowa game on Thursday.
Yeah, because it's really important to get some confidence, not just to win, but to play well and win. And I think you'll see some of those guys who maybe didn't play as much, maybe get some minutes, maybe you see Help play a little, maybe you see Wally. I would think you see Wally a little bit in the IUPUI game, because it's going to be an important three-game stretch after that, because you got Iowa with the Gavitt games on Thursday, and then you got LSU on Monday. Ben Simmons looked amazing in his debut against McNeese State. That looks like it's going to be a really tight game, though. And then, of course, after that, you have either NC State or Arizona State, who both, like Marquette, had less than thrilling debuts. Of course, their losses were worse as far as the numbers go, NC State and Arizona State. But you're going to play one of them. And so basically three recognizable opponents before you begin a slew of bye games for Marquette. So I think it's really important that Marquette, you got to start piling up some wins, Phil, because as we said, by losing that Belmont game, though, that stretch of three games, you really hope they can get two wins out of it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think, again, this is maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but based on what I saw in the Belmont game, I think they've got the ability to win all three games. The toughest one is obviously going to be LSU.
Sure.
You know, neutral game, Ben Simmons. I don't know who guards Ben Simmons, but we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah. Do you put Ellinson on him?
I think you kind of have to. Yeah, the only thing is, does Ellinson get into foul trouble?
Yeah, Antonio Blakeney is another five-star kid that LSU got, and he's going to be their point guard. And so whoever's in at point guard for Marquette, whether it's Dwayne moving over there or it's going to be Tracy Carter, or if Cheatham's going to play, they're going to have their hands full with Blakeney too. Look out for the point guard matchup.
Well, and who's going to be our best perimeter defender? It's not Carter. I'll tell you that much right now.
Yeah, I mean, is it? Shoot, I don't know.
Is it Dwayne? It might even be Hanif.
Yeah, I guess I didn't spend enough time paying attention to perimeter defense as I was watching the game to even pose a guess as to who that's going to be. But yeah, they're going to have their hands full,
especially with the new rules. Which thankfully, the other thing from the Belmont game is there weren't too many fouls called, and I thought it was actually a fairly well officiated game. So one of these games, it's just going to be a foul fest. Right. But that's going to be interesting, because the teams that I think are more perimeter-oriented are going to have an advantage until everyone kind of settles in.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have said that about the new rules, and you know, teams may be playing a little more zone to kind of force offense, you know, frustrate offenses to, you know, not have much time to work with in the shot clock. And so, yeah, if you've got guys who can just, you know, settle in and, or, you know, settle for a perimeter shot instead of, you know, absolutely having to get in the paint to get a bucket, yeah, maybe they will have an advantage. But I certainly hope Marquette never goes away from going inside, because as Henry Ellenson showed, and Luke Fisher as well, I mean, when Marquette could settle in with those two guys down low, I mean, you can get a lot of buckets in the paint. And that's the thing I love about this Marquette team now, is when the shots aren't falling from the perimeter, they now have two guys they can get the ball into who can hopefully get you some easy buckets.
Yeah, and they can drive too. And I think that was the frustrating thing about all the 3-point shooting, was they could get to the bucket. That wasn't an issue. So we'll see. You know, Ken Palm projects a win against Iowa and a loss against LSU, but, you know, it's 50.
Both close.
He has
Marquette as a 1-point favorite to Iowa and a 1-point dog to LSU.
Which I'll kind of take those. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I would too. I'll take those odds.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game. I think getting Iowa at home will be helpful, because if you can beat a Power 5 team and really kind of get some confidence going, that'll help for the big lights against LSU. And LSU will have the same issues we have: a lot of youth, but a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I'm very excited for that LSU game, but that might be something we break down in the next pod. Time permitting, of course. I know you're waiting on something over there.
Yeah. Assuming the wife character decides to release our first child into the world at some point here. We're 5 days late now, so it's got to happen.
Well, good
eventually.
Luck. We're all pulling for you, Phil. But you know, keep in mind the next podcast is TBD, depending on personal life getting in the way of podcasting this season, at least for a little bit. But we'll still be podcasting as much as we can all season long.
Well, that's part of the new and improved season for the podcast. We're adding new characters. We've got the Badger wife character, the Leo character, and now the screaming baby character.
Yeah, and I know your dog has tried to get in on the podcast several times, but now Baby Bush may be able to join the podcast eventually too. Before we get out of here, though, as we wrap up our first podcast of the season, it's just some recruiting news from the week. Nothing really too surprising, but we are in the early signing period now for college basketball, so verbal commits can't officially sign with the team. No surprise, Sam Hauser, who was a verbal to Marquette, did sign with the team, so he's on board for 2016. Brendan Bailey, who is, you know, we knew about him ahead of time that he was a verbal commit to Marquette, but what wasn't 100% clear was, but I guess was now made clear, is that he is going to take a Mormon mission, so he is technically not really joining the team. So he's really more of a 2018 commit as far as when he will affect the scholarship table. But talented kid, so he's going to join the roster as, I guess, a 20-year-old freshman in 2018. So great to have those two guys on board.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good. So we've got Sam Hauser was the critical one, yet more talent, wing talent coming in. And it's always good if you've got talent to add a 20-year-old freshman with some life experience to the roster in 2018. So we'll see what that looks like.
Well, one kid Marquette did not get, I hope I'm saying it right, Darlin Willis. He's a junior college forward who did take a visit to Marquette a couple weeks ago. He committed elsewhere. I've actually now lost where he committed to, but it was not Marquette. So Marquette did not get him. So that's one guy off the table. I don't even know. That's the thing. Matt Velasquez wrote a great article about Wojo and his recruiting philosophy and how he goes about it. And he basically confirmed what we had kind of assumed about the way Wojo recruits, is that he doesn't just throw out 40 offers and hope to get three back. You know, he basically zeroes in on a very small number of guys, and the whole staff kind of goes all in on a handful of guys. So I have no idea who Marquette's next target is. As the scholarship table currently stands, there is one spot available for next year. Of course, things change. Kids transfer. We may have Ellenson going pro, whatnot. But as things currently stand, if everyone who is eligible return does return, just one spot available for next year. So I would imagine that the coaching staff is going to be very focused and just zero in on one or two guys they really like. I wouldn't expect it to be an All-American type kid, because one thing Wojo can't promise this year's class that he was able to promise last year's class is a lot of playing time. So I'm not sure many five-star kids would be super, super interested in Marquette at this point, just because Wojo couldn't tell them all, hey, you can come in and start. Which he was able to tell that to a lot of guys last year. Henry, of course, he would have been told that no matter what the scholarship table was. But he was able to tell guys like Cheatham and Carter, hey, you're going to come in and get a chance to start. And if not start, certainly play right away. But he can't really promise that to a lot of kids. Now, if the number one player in the country, although he's already committed, but just hypothetically speaking, if a five-star All-American kid suddenly was interested in Marquette, yeah, you make room for him and say, look, you're going to have a chance to play. But I wouldn't expect a huge, huge splash name to commit to Marquette between now and April. But I do think, you know, Wojo is going to get it, go after, quote-unquote, one of his guys, someone who's going to fit the roster, fill a need. I have no idea who would it be, but I think he's going to be very patient. I would expect the fans, again, I would hope the fans just to be patient as well. You may not hear much for a while as far as who Marquette is targeting, but I assure you they are targeting someone who's going to fit whatever hole they may or may not have on the roster next year.
Well, yeah, and it's going to be interesting because he's definitely recruiting for one spot. He may be recruiting for two spots, depending on what Henry's doing. And in theory, he could be recruiting for three spots because they're who knows? I'm not starting rumors, but they're, you know, there's always, you always got to plan as if there's a transfer.
Right, yeah. I mean, kids transfer. If they realize they're not going to play, they're going to transfer. It's part of the way college basketball is. We really didn't, you know, we had Steve Taylor transfer on us before this season. Didn't really expect that, but that's what happened. So,
right. It'll be interesting.
There's no one I'm particularly expecting to transfer right now, but it happens. And that's why you recruit. I expect him to look at maybe somebody at every position, be looking at a guard, be looking at a forward, be looking at a big man. And then as you zero in on a guy and figure who fits best, that's when Wojo and the staff will go all in on one guy and then make the offer.
Right. Well, and they're going to have to figure out, because where it's going to be interesting is, you know you need at least one. So do you look at JUCO's, you know, but then you've also got potential other teams that have transfers leaving their school come springtime. Do you, you know, let's say for some reason, you know, Henry stays, nobody transfers, and you only got one spot. You want to be real selective with that one spot. So do you?
That's right. I mean, the thing is, yeah. Again, hypothetically speaking, again, we're just totally throwing this out there. If everyone on the roster comes back next year, there may not be any playing time available at all. But maybe if you get a transfer from a school who has to sit out a year, then the year after that, you may really have some holes to fill. And so maybe that would be an ideal situation to bring in a transfer. And inevitably, there will be several guys who are going to transfer at semester nationwide, because there always are. So there are going to be names that are going to pop up between here and there. So again, I expect Wojo and the staff to be very patient. There's no need to necessarily rush and get a commit between, you know, before the early signing period ends. I wouldn't expect another commit from Marquette until the spring signing period. So yeah, be patient, and I'm sure there will be guys out there, even if they are not out there currently, that Marquette will target and make for a stronger 16-17 campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll but we're definitely getting ahead of ourselves since we just played one game in the entire season.
We are one game in. And you know, just to wrap up and conclude, Phil, one game, although it was a disappointing result, I really am not overly concerned or panicking about this team overall. I liked what I saw. I like the roster. I like the makeup of the team. I think there is plenty of room to improve, and I think there are plenty of reasons to believe they will improve, and that this is going to be an enjoyable season for Marquette basketball fans.
Yeah, while the loss is disappointing, and I've said it previously, I am more positive now about the season overall than I was before the game. So, you know, maybe I'm crazy or just getting prepared for my sleep deprivation, but I think this team has lots of opportunity to be successful.
And they're going to be fun to watch.
Yes, that's the other thing is they will be enjoyable. If you're getting all upset about the loss and this team, like, why do you watch basketball? Like, this will be a fun team.
Go hang out on JS Comments.
Oh, yeah. You'll have a lot of friends there right now.
Yeah. All right, well, again, we appreciate you guys listening. This is our first podcast of the regular season. We hope to do it, generally speaking, on a weekly basis now that we are in season. We always appreciate you guys joining us. We always welcome your feedback, your comments on the podcast. You can leave them on cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the blog. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is M00F23. And then you can hit up the team Twitter as well, Crack Sidewalks there. And, of course, we have a Facebook page where Phil posts the podcasts. And we're also on iTunes, so there's all that. I think I've hit everything.
Yeah, I think you hit all the bases. I think we're good to get out.
All right, well, Phil, good luck on the baby watch. Hopefully we have more exciting news next week, both win-wise and baby-wise.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, well, good luck with everything. Until then, seashells and balloons, everyone.